Today's episode of Dog Nation Daily is brought to you by Demerbox. Go to demerbox.com/dognation for $50 off while supplies last.
Presented by DogNation.com, this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Here's your host, Brandon Adams.
So I tried to make the case yesterday here in our program for why, you know, guys my age, people that remember the 90s, why we still feel that Georgia-Tennessee is a rivalry, even though the current state of the two programs could not appear to be, at least at first blush, to be going in opposite directions. Georgia is seemingly a program continually on the ascent as it builds towards what dog fans hope turns out to be a national championship. Tennessee is circling the drain right now. I'm not even quite sure. They're even worse than most of us imagine. I don't think any of us thought they'd be all that good. So it's almost like you have to really dig up into the history books. You have to really reach into your imagination to kind of conjure this one up as a rivalry on Saturday, because the overall appearances of the program are just quite so different. And as an example of just maybe how bad things are. And listen, you know, Georgia's still got to go out and play a game on Saturday. It can't take anybody for granted. It can't take anybody lightly. You know, blah, blah, blah. You got to say all that kind of stuff. But as an example of just how bad things may have gotten for Tennessee in comparison to one of its big rivals in the SEC East, Georgia, I present to you Exhibit A. So Jeremy Pruitt, the Tennessee coach, is asked during the press conference yesterday about the fact that some Georgia fans, and we've talked about this, there's all kinds of like social media campaigns out there, and I've showed you some of the graphics and everything else of, if you take what Tennessee has done in the past when they've tried to checkerboard Neyland Stadium, every other section either wears the orange or the white, the orange or the white. Georgia fans have said, okay, well, let's take that same blueprint and let's substitute red in place of this and black in place of that. The assumption among many Georgia fans, there are going to be so many UGA fans there this upcoming Saturday that Georgia fans themselves can also coordinate and organize a checkerboard. Now, I've said before that I think that would be a pretty difficult pull, and if Georgia even has as many as 20,000 fans in Neyland Stadium on Saturday, that in itself is a pretty impressive performance, just given how few college football fans travel to away games the way they used to. It used to be a big thing to do. There's a lot less of that now. Case in point, the Notre Dame game at Athens a couple weeks ago, as hyped as it was, there weren't much more than about 10,000 Notre Dame fans there. They got 8,000 tickets from Georgia. You'd be hard-pressed to see that many more than that actually made their way into Dooley Field in Sanford Stadium. The teams just don't travel that much. Georgia is a little bit of an outlier in that regard. But so much so they could checkerboard Neyland Stadium and make the entire thing look like a coordinated stadium takeover. Here's a very funny exchange with a reporter and a pretty terse response from Tennessee coach Jeremy Pruitt. I think you'll like this.
I was wondering if you have heard Georgia fans are trying to checker Neyland red and black, just your reaction to that.
You know, I have a hard time believing that it would happen.
Something about Pruitt, just as deadpan as he is, I have a hard time believing that would happen. There's something about that I find to be just kind of quite perfect, because, let's face it, as I said yesterday, if you want to go back and look at the time that I grew up, I'm talking about, you know, coming of age as a high school kid, I remember being in Athens for the 92 game, a pretty good Georgia team, and a lot of turnovers there that day, and Tennessee came in and ended up sneaking out of Athens with a win. It's a heartbreaking game for a lot of us who were growing up and were fans there at that time, and not to mention the Peyton Manning era that would follow after that. And, you know, I remember the first game day game, the first time ESPN's College Game Day was in Athens in 1998, and Georgia fans had just come off a big win at LSU, feeling like they had a chance to go out and beat Tennessee there that day. And Tennessee, to its credit, dominated the game and would eventually go on that year to win the national championship. You'll give them credit for the performances, but for the Georgia fans who lived through that, that was a pretty rough time. So for people that have that perspective, for people that can remember that backstory, to think things have changed so much in all these subsequent years that now, before the 2019 game, Jeremy Pruitt's being asked how badly he thinks that Georgia fans might take over Neyland Stadium, I think for a lot of Georgia fans, there is a pretty strong sense of satisfaction knowing that things have altered quite this much. Ultimately, will there be a checkerboard of Neyland Stadium? I think that's probably a pretty bold ask, even for Georgia fans. However, I do think there'll be a substantial number of folks dressed in red and black, and my guess is, come this Saturday in Neyland Stadium, I think they're going to get to see another pretty good show to enjoy. My name is Brandon Adams, and this is Dog Nation Daily, the daily podcast for Georgia Bulldogs fans. Hello to you, and thanks for being with us no matter how you get to us today, live on video, 10 a.m., Dog Nation Facebook, YouTube, Twitter. We're on the radio at noon, of course, on Athens Sports Radio 960 The Ref, and we're available as a podcast wherever you find them, the Apple Podcast Player, the Google Podcast Player. We post the show even at theworldfamousdognation.com as well. We're just really glad to have you with us. And today, Dog Nation Daily, the entire thing is brought to you by our friends at DemerBox. Now, if you've seen this on video, you know kind of what this is. This is kind of like the ultimate tailgating apparatus. This is a indestructible Pelican case. There's actually something in my DemerBox right now. I'm not even sure what it is. Somebody put something in here, but nonetheless, this is it. And it's got a Bluetooth speaker on the front. This thing is the Bluetooth speaker works like up to 100 feet away. It's got 40 hours of battery life. At our Dog Nation Express tailgate the other day, we had kind of a cool experience where we hooked a bunch of these up together and all the Bluetooth speakers working together. It ends up making like this really amazing sound system, so you can kind of connect all that together. We had a guy in here, I told you the other day, we're kind of working and reconfiguring and kind of rebuilding, remodeling our studio. It's going to be bigger and better than ever before, our Dog Nation World Headquarters Studios. One of the guys that's been here working on this was also a big fan of DemerBox. He thought it was really cool that we had some DemerBox as well. He said one of the things he likes to do is because these things float, they're waterproof, they float. He said, you know, you're Chattahoochee River, something like that on the weekend or the lake or whatever, you can just pop this DemerBox right down there in the water. So it's pretty good stuff there with our friends at DemerBox. And there's a great offer I want to tell you about right now. Right now, we're able to offer $50 off the first 100 orders. This is only while supplies last, but get in, get $50 off your DemerBox order. Whatever you're doing outdoors, DemerBox is the perfect accompaniment to go along with that, especially when it comes to tailgating stuff. The website you want to go to is DemerBox.com. Now, if you're listening radio podcast, let me give you the spelling on this. It's D-E-M-E-R, DemerBox.com, just one E in the front, D-E-M-E-R, DemerBox.com/DogNation. You can get $50 off this while supplies last, the great DemerBox here, and it's great to have them as part of Dog Nation Daily. All right, before we get Jeff Sintel for our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update today, I want to talk about something else that was kind of on my mind, and I mentioned this briefly to our video audience yesterday. We do kind of a comment section in the show called our R.S. Andrews Cooldown, and I was saying that when I've been looking at some stats for Georgia, I think pretty quietly, Georgia's actually been pretty good. It's something that sometimes can be a little misleading, but in Georgia's case, I'm not quite so sure that it is. Because let's face it, here's what a lot of us did going back to this past weekend. Georgia didn't play, but other national contenders did. Alabama played Ole Miss. Clemson played North Carolina. Ohio State played Nebraska. I don't remember who Oklahoma played, but you got a chance to kind of see a pretty good collection of the national elite on the field. And we're all kind of curious, 5 weeks into the season, four Georgia games into the season, of the regular season anyway, how does Georgia compare to the best teams in the country? Well, I believe there's one aspect of Georgia that actually compares pretty favorably to the national elite when you look at things a little deeper. Georgia right now is sixth in America in points allowed per game, yielding just 10 per game. We'll show you the teams that are ranked ahead of UGA right now. It's Wisconsin, it's Penn State, it's Iowa, it's Ohio State. So Big Ten teams occupy all four of the top four spots here. Then you get to Florida, and then you get to Georgia. But here's where I think things kind of get interesting for me just a little bit, and why I think that Georgia ranking sixth at 10 per game is actually pretty interesting. Take a look at who Wisconsin's played. They're the team that's yielded the fewest points per game thus far this season. They played South Florida, Central Michigan. They have played Michigan, although you can decide for yourself how impressive that opponent even is anymore. And they played Northwestern, a relatively low-scoring team. Penn State's played Idaho, Buffalo, Pitt, and then I thought pretty impressive this past Friday night against Maryland. Iowa's played Miami of Ohio, Rutgers, Iowa State, and Middle Tennessee State. Ohio State's played Florida Atlantic, Cincinnati, Indiana, also Miami of Ohio, and this past Saturday I thought pretty impressive, all things considered, against Nebraska, given that was a road spot. Florida has played Miami of Florida, UT Martin, Kentucky, Tennessee, and then this past week they played Towson, which I think did have Joe Flacco's brother quarterback, but it's still Towson. Now, Georgia, by comparison, its four games, has played two Power 5 opponents. One of those is Vanderbilt. You may say, well, Vanderbilt, for the most part, is no great shakes, but Vanderbilt did score 24 on the road at Purdue, scored 38 in kind of a blowout game against LSU, but still hung 38 points on the LSU defense. Georgia held them to just 6 points that night to open the season. Arkansas State, which kind of gets lumped together with the kind of also ran Georgia opponents. Have you seen what Arkansas State has done offensively in the other games, which has not played Georgia this season? They scored 30 in week one against an undefeated SMU team. They scored 43 in a win at UNLV, have scored 41, and have scored 50 points. So when not playing Georgia, Arkansas State has been putting up at least 30 points in every game and 40 or more in three of its four games, and even including 50 this past week. Now, you also add to that, the one thing that makes Georgia's 10 points a game look pretty impressive is the fact that Georgia, in comparison to Florida, Ohio State, Iowa, Penn State, Wisconsin, has also played a top 10 team up to this point. And defensively, even though there was a lot said about Georgia maybe not getting after the quarterback as much as you would have liked against Notre Dame, and maybe not getting as many tackles for loss as you would have liked against Notre Dame, maybe not getting as much of that, Georgia did a pretty good job of keeping the Fighting Irish off the scoreboard. In fact, the touchdown that Notre Dame scores comes on a very short field, and Notre Dame had to go on fourth down to even get that. And of course, as we talk about all of this, it'll also harken back to 2017 when Georgia was also quite good at keeping teams off the scoreboard. I mean, ultimately, I'm not really the kind of guy a lot of times who's necessarily going to push a stat like this, because when it comes to points allowed, points scored, things along those lines, that typically is a factor and a component of who you've played equally as much as how you've played. But in Georgia's case, when you look at its four games thus far this season, the offenses that it's gone up against, the fact that Georgia is only averaging 10 points per game against those teams, I think actually speaks pretty well for what Georgia is doing defensively. And of course, all of this kind of comes to mind with Georgia going back to Knoxville on Saturday, a place the last time UGA played there, it had one of the big signature performances of the early Kirby Smart era, getting a 41-0 shutout against the Vols. Now, is it too much to ask that Georgia might be able to repeat that feat against Tennessee this week? Maybe so. That might be a little greedy among UGA fans. But Kirby Smart was asked when he spoke to reporters yesterday how the fact that Georgia did pitch the shutout the last time that it was in Neyland Stadium, the last time that it was in Knoxville, how that factors into any of the kind of emotions for this Saturday's game. And Smart gave a pretty interesting answer to that. Here's Kirby on the subject.
I think they were in such a different state and time at that time. You know, their program was in a different direction than it really is now. And I don't look at that game as any kind of indication of where we've gone. Jake played well in a tough environment, but we had a different football team. You know, we had a very experienced defensive football team, and we had some really good players on offense at the skill positions. So I think that game has nothing to do with this game. They're playing with a high motor and a chip on their shoulder, and they're playing extremely hard. And we know we're going to get their best shot, and our job is to make sure they get our best shot.
So Kirby says that this upcoming Saturday's game against Tennessee doesn't really have anything to do with what happened there in 2017, and that's probably to a certain extent true. But the one thing the two games might have in common is that when Georgia went to Knoxville, even though that was kind of a depleted Tennessee team too, let's face it, Tennessee's now been depleted for a number of years, it was a bit of a message on the part of the Dogs. They were able to go out there and dominate that game from the word go the way they did. It showed fans that this team was going to be for real and was about to maybe go on a little bit of a run, and it worked out to be exactly that same way. I think it was probably a little bit of a harbinger for the national media as well of make sure you start paying attention to Georgia. Well, that's the one thing that this game this Saturday might have in common too. I mean, let's face it, we've said before, this is going to be a weird October for UGA. The only three games the Dogs will play this entire month are Tennessee this Saturday, and then it's South Carolina, and then it's Kentucky. At face value, some of that doesn't quite seem as hallmark and as marquee and as bold print as what Georgia's already done against Notre Dame and what it will do in the month of November when it takes on teams like Florida and Auburn. But in the never-ending comparison game between Georgia and the other national elite, Georgia gets a chance for the next couple of weeks to do what teams like Ohio State and Alabama have already done, play a consecutive series of games against overmatched opponents. And it's a chance for Georgia now to flex its muscles here a little bit. It's a chance for Georgia to now say, take a look at some of the things that we're able to do in comparison to what some of these other playoff contenders are currently able to do. And we can obviously talk about what Georgia hasn't done yet, hasn't sacked the quarterback enough, hasn't produced enough tackles for loss. That's getting better compared to 2018. But you still probably want more of that. However, don't let the discussion about what Georgia hasn't done yet distract you from what Georgia is doing pretty well. They're keeping teams out of the end zone at the moment, and my guess is that continues this Saturday against Tennessee and for a couple of weeks to come there as well. Before I bring on Jeff Sintel, let me also remind you about a great thing going on with our friends at Kroger right now. You know, it's flu season coming up, and this is the kind of thing that when it comes up, you don't want to miss work. Well, Kroger's got you taken care of when it comes to that because you can get your flu vaccination right there at Kroger. Now, there's no appointment needed, And really good news, you can get this flu vaccination for a copayment as low as $0. So find out more about this by going to this website. It's Kroger.com/flu. Kroger.com/flu. All right, here's what's coming up later on today on Dog Nation Daily presented by DiemerBach. I'm going to share audio with you of what Georgia coach Kirby Smart said yesterday when asked about getting a chance to go up against his former offensive coordinator, Jim Chaney. We'll talk about that, and we'll address a little bit about how the Chaney impact in Knoxville is probably not quite as significant as I thought it would be, and certainly Vols fans hoped it would be. We'll do all that coming up later on. For now, though, there is a lot to get to when it comes to UGA recruiting. Stuff on Noah Sewell, good piece from Jeff Sintel there. Look back at Kendall Milton, who's also weighed in heavily on some hot topics involving UGA recruiting. We'll cover it all. We're glad you're with us. It's Dog Nation Daily presented by DiemerBach. Hope you enjoy Jeff Sintel.
From Athens and across the SEC or wherever the recruiting trail may lead, here's a DogNation.com insider.
All right, so Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. It's good to have Jeff Sintel back with us here again on Dog Nation Daily to talk about a number of things that he's been writing for DogNation.com as the aftermath kind of continues for what was a very busy recruiting weekend for Georgia against Notre Dame, and the fallout's going to kind of be felt on this for a little while to come. First of all, Jeff, welcome back. Thanks for being a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update, and hope you're doing well today.
Brandon, how are you, sir?
Well, you sound good
to
me.
We're not talking in the echo chamber anymore.
Yeah, you sound good to me. Do I sound okay to you?
Well, besides the normal paranoia about not getting that five-star Auburn worries, yada, 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 yeah, it's pretty good, man.
Yeah, that's pretty well said. Let me just kind of get into the piece he wrote with Noah Sewell over there at DogNation.com. I thought it was good. I thought that your statement last Wednesday when you were with us before the Hedges presented by Kroger, I thought that was pretty strong. It certainly seems like Sewell enjoyed himself at UGA and feels confident about the Dogs right now. I guess, would you mind giving us a couple of your key takeaways from having had a chance to talk to Sewell both before he took his Georgia visit and then again after the visit was over? What were your takeaways from that?
Well, I guess, Brandon, for you, as you like to see a side through quotes, you love it when a player uses the word love a lot, welcomed, fun, smiling. And here's what Georgia has done with Noah Sewell. And we tried to capture that with our perspective on the piece, was he had a fundamentally strong anchor official visit back in the summer. That was 3 days where he went A to Z on Georgia. That was basically everything that a plugged-in family that knows the recruiting game needs to look for: weight rooms, academic counselors, nutritionists, weight rooms, dorms, campus tours, degree fits, yada, yada, yada. And then he went into the Georgia official visit with basically two wishes. The first one was to see something spectacular in terms of the game day atmosphere. The green emoji check can go next to that one. And the second one was to still feel a brotherhood, a kinship, a bond developing with his potential future teammates in the linebacker room. And I think that one was not only, I'm not going to give it a green emoji check, I'm going to give it a blue and pink emoji check, because that's the color of the paintballs that Georgia did a very savvy move that somehow made the second day of Noah Sewell's official visit even more impactful than the game day visit with all those red lights.
Yeah, and that, you know, the whole paintball thing, you know, kind of goes back into what we've said before, that, you know, Sewell's coming from Utah, and, you know, different people are going to be attracted to different things. Some guys are going to want the hunting and fishing experience. Some guys are maybe going to want to see, you know, what downtown Athens looks like. You know, different people are going to be attracted to different things. But for Sewell, I've always felt like relationships are going to be more important than anything else. Now, he does give you a pretty bold comment about the fans and kind of what the stadium atmosphere was like, but I've always felt like relationships were more important for the Sewell recruitment than virtually anything else. It's a long way to come. His family has a history of kind of, you know, being college football out there on the West Coast. This is a little bit of a trailblazing recruitment for Georgia in a lot of ways, and those relationships were just going to have to be locked down. And it certainly sounds like Georgia's done a pretty good job of doing that, whether it be the coaching relationship, guys like Glenn Schumann, Dan Lanning, other linebackers in the linebacking room. That certainly seems to be progressing here pretty well, which for me was maybe more important for Sewell because of the geography more so than anything else. I know you've said that the geography ultimately wouldn't matter for Sewell's recruitment, but Jeff, my response to that is, well, that must mean that Georgia's doing a pretty good job of establishing the relationships, because if it wasn't for that, then I do think the geography probably would be a little bit of a thing to navigate.
Yeah, I think with a lot of those things with Noah, like the last time we spoke to him, which was before the official, we kind of teed up things there. He said phrases that still stick out to me, where he says there's something about Georgia that he can't explain. It feels like they're coaching a different game in Athens, a different type of ball. He's told me in the past that he really appreciates how Georgia keeps in touch with its former players, guys like, you know, the Sonny Michels, the Nick Chubbs, but specifically to his unit, the linebacker group with Roquan Smith. He's already seen how Georgia can win big games and get to the big games and put a linebacker in the first round, an inside linebacker in the first round, and win a Butkus Award in the SEC coming out of Georgia. And he's seen all those things accomplished by Glenn Schumann, who also coached Roquan. So with all that, this visit was important. And I think what we tried to get that too with Noah is what we try to do with a lot of these stories is, you know, yes, we present a lot of material and we present a lot of thoughts about these young men, and we also try to identify what they are beyond the game as well. And I thought in the fourth quarter of that story, I kind of tucked some information back in there that I thought should give folks a minute to give themselves some pause. The first one, and I'm just going to say it, Brandon, it might be one of the best answers I've ever heard to Noah Sewell when he gave us what he thought was his best thing about playing football, his favorite thing about playing football. And I wanted to ask that question, Brandon, because the kid's 266. He can butt heads. He runs the football. I think he's at 9 yards per carry. He came back from an injury rehab and just jumped right in playing linebacker. He runs like a receiver. He has ball skills like a running back, and he hits like a defensive tackle. And he told me, with all that, his favorite thing to do on a football field is to watch the second string come in, because he likes to see others have success, and he feels that those guys on his football team work just as hard as the first team guys but don't get half of the credit. And I thought that was an amazing answer. And another answer that I hope you put your microphone and hope you put your looking glass firmly upon is when I asked him about maybe the parting message that Kirby Smart left him with. And he said what Kirby said to him meant something, and it made an impact. I think his phrasing was, it surely did, or it really did. That's a lot of good things that Georgia's lining up here. And I know, Brandon, you're a big fan of golf, the links and golf metaphors.
Sure.
So I'm going to say this. With Georgia and its last two, and its two visits for Noah Sewell, I think it stacked up a 65-66. And if somebody's going to go low enough to beat that, then you have to tip their cap to them.
It's our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update with Jeff Sintel here. Great way to describe just how things went for Sewell in Athens before. And, of course, we certainly appreciate Marlowe's Tavern being a part of this. And my suggestion to you would be is, if you're looking for a date night this time of year, boy, Marlowe's Tavern is a great, great choice for that. You can kind of slide in, sit together in a comfy booth, and maybe connect with that special significant other in your life across from some creme brulee. It's always a good choice on date night. I'm a big believer that when you do date night, you got to get dessert. I'm a big believer in that. And, of course, Marlowe's Tavern got some great, great dessert options. You can check that out at the Marlowe's nearest you. And don't forget, we do the Marlowe's matchup every Thursday with our buddy, former UGA great John Stenchcombe. And we got more Marlowe's broadcasts coming up live here on Thursday nights in the very near future as well. So I hope you'll stay tuned for a lot more of that. Jeff, I also enjoyed your piece with a five-star running back, Kendall Milton, recently. And you know, seeing Milton in Athens for the Notre Dame game and seeing his entire family there and kind of their social media posts about that, you can't help but wonder the fact that Milton, as highly rated as a player as he is, the seeming rock-solid nature of his commitment, how much does that help George with other uncommitted players, knowing that you've got such a high-profile guy as committed to Georgia as he is? Milton's personality has got a little bit of magnetism to it. How much is Milton, you know, helping Georgia right now in comparison to some of the other coattails that we've seen other recruits have in the past, Pied Piper types? Milton seemingly has that really big personality. Is it helping Georgia as much as it seems like it might be?
Yeah, Brandon, I don't know if with Kendall, he's so smooth. I don't know if Pied Piper actually works best. I think we need to modernize it, maybe have like the great Satchmo piping out some New Orleans jazz. I think that, you know, a great trumpet player, because, you know, I think you kind of nailed it right there, Brandon, when you said he has a magnetism to him. He has a confidence about him, and what he says carries weight. And, this is a guy that wants to own a chain of car dealerships, hopefully around the Southeast, once his playing days are done. Kendall has that way with him, and when he comes out so strongly for Georgia without seeming like he's coming strong for Georgia at all, I mean, the young man has already created a gif across the internet with his flag waving out of the Georgia Jeep. Hat tip to the DogNation.com production team for creating a viral gif across the Twitter stratospheres and the like. But I think the main thing he said was he starts talking about the tight ends and what he said to them and about becoming the most dangerous offense in college football. I'm sure that was something right there, Brandon, that really struck a nerve with you.
Oh, sure. Yeah, of course. I mean, that's the kind of thing you hope to see Georgia be able to build. I mean, there's obviously – you just see what offensive football does on a Saturday when some teams are scoring big points and, you know, you can debate the level of competition they're doing it against, but that definitely turns heads. And, you know, the recruiting machine that Georgia has built, I think the next phase of that is going out there and really flexing yourself on a Saturday in, Saturday out basis when it comes to the offensive stuff. So I'm not surprised to hear Milton talking that way. I'm not surprised to hear him expressing the enthusiasm about that topic that he does. And I think he could certainly be right about that. And I think hopefully we would all agree that is the next phase for Georgia, to go out there and add a little extra pizzazz to what's already a very good offense.
You know, Brandon, let me get into some football stuff with you here, because I know you like to tee stuff up like that too. Do you think the way Georgia's built with that pizzazz on offense that they'll only show that when it's necessary? Because as stout as Georgia keeps stacking up the defense and the players on defense like Legos, I think there's always going to be a little bit of that penchant to protect the defense. Even Nick Saban got into the act this weekend about he doesn't want to see his defense facing 80-plus snaps every weekend, because he knows sooner or later they'll get schemed out of something and somebody will bust one. What's your take on that?
You know, there's a phrase that sometimes you use with your friends when you're busting chops or something. You say, you know, you can't hide that money. You see somebody wearing nice clothes, nice car, something along those lines. You say you can't hide that money. You know, I hope that Georgia one day builds an offense, or maybe it's got one right now that it's working on. I hope that Georgia builds an offense that's so explosive and so dynamic that it can't be kept under wraps. You know, this idea that Georgia doesn't need more offense than this against whatever opponent that might be playing. I hope that one day Georgia builds an offense that's so explosive that it can't be hidden. It can't be held under wraps even by a conservative game plan, that it's so dynamic that dynamism becomes on display against virtually every opponent that it goes up against. I think the potential's there for that now. By the time 2020 rolls around, or, you know, Kendall Milton's career takes place, maybe that's happening each and every Saturday. But I think that's the next phase for Georgia, for it not to choose, is this a day we want to be dynamic offensively or not? It becomes the kind of thing where Georgia can't help but be explosive, because that is who it is in its offensive DNA.
Yeah, it looks like, you know, they keep stacking up the pieces. And I think the wide receiver group, I think, is the key to that. Once the wide receivers are, and let's face it, Dominic Blaylock and George Pickens aren't where they're going to be in November yet. They've got to start making the move right now during this kind of early rungs of the SEC East. I guess I'll call it a gauntlet. The early rungs of the schedule. This is where these guys need to start developing. I think, and I would imagine most of the people that are listening in on the program would probably agree that Pickens, Blaylock, Cager, Simmons, Robertson, that's probably the group at receiver that Georgia needs to roll with for the rest of the season.
I think you're right about that.
You know, I think that's the key to Georgia unlocking a lot of things. You saw a different DeAndre Swift. I don't know if people are speaking enough and giving enough lip service, but I was kind of nodding my head with all of Kirby Smart's post-game comments about, you know, why didn't Zamir White get enough run? Why didn't they do more of this and do more of that? You know, DeAndre Swift is such a special football player. When he's all the way in and fully healthy and running the way he did between the tackles at Georgia, I mean, that's something dynamic. And as a play caller, Brandon, I would be tempted. I would imagine most of those to be tempted, because I think a lot of the frustration about tight end run and everything else, it still boils down to this. whose hands on the Georgia offense do you want to put that rock? And you better give me a really good, strong conviction for somebody else getting that rock the majority of the snaps against a stout opponent other than DeAndre Swift. That's just the way I see it.
Yeah, I think that's probably true. Speaking of running backs, yeah, I think pretty much for the next however long you come on our Marlo Stammer Insider Update, I'm going to keep asking you about this second running back for the class of 2020. You've written about this recently in the forum at forum.dognation.com. First of all, letting us know that Zachary Evans has returned to action for his North Shore High School there in Houston, seemed to put up pretty good numbers in his most recent game. Obviously, there's still the curiosity that lingers going back to Tank Bigsby being in town for the Auburn game. Being in town for the Notre Dame game. What do you think things kind of stand right now for Georgia in this 2020 running back situation? You know, whether it be with Bigsby, whether it be whatever's going on with Evans right now. I guess just kind of what is the latest? You can take it wherever you want to go.
That's kind of wherever it wants to go is probably the way this recruiting for the second running back can go. Brandon, I just feel that this one is going to be one that really anybody, at least publicly, to get their arms around with Zach Evans, and I think that's the way I'm going to approach this topic. Zachary Evans has been up and he has been down, and he has zigged and zagged in terms of the eventuality of whether he's going to end up at Georgia. Was he trending to Georgia? Is he still going to be at Georgia? I think these are unknown chapters that still need to be written. I think whatever adversity Zach Evans has gone through right now, this is what I'm going to keep stating, I think the road is still not paved yet, and that road needs to get paved before he can finally see where he ends up. And I have no problems making this statement. Anybody that wants to tout out that they know exactly what's going on with Zachary Evans and they know what happens next week and the week after that, I think they're probably just trying to go out on a limb and nail a prediction, because the honest truth, Brandon, is I don't think anybody really knows what's going on with Zachary Evans in this recruitment. Where he felt last week, where he feels this week, where he feels next week, I don't think those are all going to be all congruent, lining up to where he feels on that middle Wednesday. I think it's December the 19th and December the first day of the early signing period. I just think there's a lot of road ahead left with Zachary Evans. And I think, to me, and I'll just kind of give you a glimmer of what I'm thinking, I think there are names at the running back position that are much more likely to show up in Georgia's class than Zachary Evans right now. And the other thing that I shared on the forum is I think that E.J. Smith visit says a lot, because Kendall Milton told me that he spent a lot of time talking to E.J. Smith. That's the son of the former NFL Hall of Famer and Florida great, about the opportunities that would be there at Georgia for any running back that wants to come in. Now, is E.J. Smith kind of the perfect fit for what Georgia is looking for? I don't think that's an exact fit. But I don't see Georgia going too far down the board to reach for the second running back in that class. I think possibilities like graduate transfers running back, but also a third running back, a running back option, like if you look at a guy like Corey Wren, well, he can give you at Georgia a lot of the plays that James Cook does right now as one of the five running backs in the room for Georgia. Of course, Georgia always wants to have five running backs in the stable, but I think a Corey Wren can run some of those plays, who's already in the class, and I also think an Arian Smith, which is now shaping up to be a Georgia Clemson slobber knocker to the end in terms of who gets that commitment. I think he's the type of guy that could also run some of that James Cook stuff in the backfield. Because when we look at Georgia's running back position right now and its future, you got to likely move Swift and Arian away. We've talked about that ad nauseum. And for next year, right now, it will leave Milton, McIntosh, Zamir, and Cook. I think that's a pretty good group, especially when you might add a Corey Wren for some of that James Cook stuff that he's doing right now.
Yeah, I want to talk to you more about Wren and Smith, the two 2020 wide receivers, one committed, one obviously still a pretty contested battle, because I did see your piece of the form about that. Let me squeeze in one thing, though, before we get there. You know what the twists and turns of the audience has been here when it's come with the running backs. Bigsby, because he's from Georgia, is incredibly popular. There are a lot of Georgia fans, even with Zachary Evans kind of out there and potentially available. If I came on the air today and announced that Georgia had gotten Bigsby, the response in the comment section would mostly be positive. I mean, I'm overwhelmingly positive, and the same thing would be true with Twitter and everything else. For the most part, the loud applause for Georgia getting Bigsby would drown out any questions of, well, what happened to Zachary Evans or anything like that. Bixby's kind of a popular figure among UGA fans because they like in-state running backs. However, the one thing I have heard a little bit lately is from some people who've either reached out on Twitter or the comment section, whatever else, is that Bigsby's too similar to Kendall Milton. They're both kind of the big power bruising running backs. They're, you know, not to say they're not athletic, because obviously you can see on both their films they are, but Evans, because of the speed, is the different kind of dimension where Bigsby seems to replicate a little bit of what Kendall Milton does really well. What would you say about that, given the fact that Georgia's got the commitment from a very strong, big, kind of a bruising running back? Does Georgia need to use that second running back on a speedier type player? Now, I realize the Evans thing is complicated beyond more than just the evaluation of him as a football player, but he is the archetype of a faster running back. Does Georgia need to make sure its second running back for this class is a faster player?
Yeah, so I would say Milton is the clear thunder. He's 220 right now. He'll probably be a 220, 225 back. The likeness there is Nick Chubb. The other back, I don't think Bigsby's the power back or a similar skill set to Milton. I think he's more the explosive, versatile, all-around guy. One thing I did learn is, like, the differences between his pro shuttle drill. Evans has the elite upon elite 3.83, and I think Kendall's was a 4.33. Well, Kendall had never really ran that. I mean, excuse me, Tank has never ran that discipline before, and he wasn't really trained up for that. That's a good reason why his 4.33 is a little bit higher. Tank's always been the guy, Brandon. If everybody remembers his recruitment, I think Clemson had him pegged as a ball-hawking safety. Others, when he was originally coming up out of Callaway High School, people thought he was an athlete because he could catch the ball. He could do so many things with the ball in his hands. I think he's more of that lightning, that all-purpose type guy look that would be the complement for Georgia. And, you know, I would be remiss if I didn't include the name Don Chaney Jr. in here as well, because that's a guy who is spot on what would bring a lot of those things for the Sony Michel, the James Cook type player in the Georgia offense. And you're looking at a Miami flip with Chaney. You're looking at an Auburn flip with Tank. I think some of the structure around the Auburn commitment seems pretty sound now for Tank, considering the hot and cold that's been with Georgia, partly maybe likely because of the interest in Zachary Evans and trying to find the best available back. But I think when Tank looks at Auburn now, he sees a lot of stability. He sees a strong passer that will be there for 2 or 3 years at least with him. He sees a program that's arching into the top 10 and playing like a top 5, top 6 team. So I think a lot of the nuts and bolts right now for Auburn is looking pretty strong. So where Georgia goes in that running back, I liken it to musical chairs at times, because it seems everything's dancing to the beat of its own independent drummer a lot. I think that's when we're just going to have to wait. Does Zachary Evans become a guy that Georgia still wants to include in that class? Can Georgia flip a Don Chaney? Can Georgia flip a Tank Bigsby? You don't hear a lot anymore on the trail about Marshawn Lloyd. And does a guy like Ashad Clayton Johnson, that's the teammate of Cedric Von Prahn in New Orleans, does he become somebody Georgia goes down its board a little bit to take in order to just take two running backs in this class? There's the published reports out there where Mr. Clayton is down to Kansas, or not down to, but he has Kansas and Georgia in a very odd-looking tattoo, especially in the year 2019.
Yeah, that's quite a comparison. All right, I've kept you long. Let me squeeze in one tiny question before we go. I did enjoy your post at the forum, forum.dognation.com, talking about the one receiver that Georgia does have, Corey Wren, although I guess he plays more of a running back for his high school team because they don't throw it very much. And then Arian Smith, whose contested battle Clemson has offered recently, Alabama, I guess, is in the mix on Arian a bit too. Arian is, to my knowledge, a little bit like Wren in that they are both kind of these world-class speedster types, true speedy receivers. And when you look at what Georgia has right now in its receiving core and what's really working, you know, the size of George Pickens, the kind of overall total package for the most part of Dominic Blaylock, although Blaylock's not a pure speedster necessarily. You know, Cager's kind of one of those seemingly a little bit bigger receivers. Obviously, he's on his way out the door at the end of this year. The point I'm getting to, though, is that Georgia seems to have the size, the big receivers down, guys that can go high point the football and, you know, create some separation and space for themselves. How much of a need in your mind is this true speedster receiver. I hate to make the comparison game, but to be Georgia's version of Jalen Waddle, a guy that occupies space in the middle because you're worried about big guys on the perimeter, how much does Georgia need just a burner to go along with the bigger guys that it has?
Yeah, that's the game there, Brandon. I know that's the end game, what a lot of people are thinking. You know, one of my thoughts that I express a lot on the forum is I think Georgia's dime package now is as strong as it's ever been in the Kirby Smart era, especially if Eric Stokes and Tyson Campbell are back to 90, 95, 100%. And the reason for that is Georgia needs to mimic some of those scary offenses. Georgia doesn't have a guy who can put his foot in the ground and erase any type of coverage anybody wants to put their way on a nine route. Remember those big plays that Nicole Hardman made against Alabama in the national championship game? That's just what you need against one of those elite defenses or one of those teams where you can just put that fear factor in the defense. And that's the one thing that Georgia doesn't have right now in the offense. And you hear a lot of fans and even national observers wonder what Georgia would look like if Nicole Hardman was still a senior on this football team. And that's the thing that Georgia is doing. You got to give their recruiting efforts a lot of credit because Kirby Smart talks about self-scouting a lot. Well, what he really does on the recruiting trail is self-identify areas that which this team doesn't have. And besides that 210-pound, 6'2" corner that can run a 4.3 or a 266-pound inside linebacker that can run a 4.1 short shuttle, or besides 6'7" and 6'8" tight ends that run like the wind, I think the thing that they need is they need that explosive guy with a gear that very few football teams have. That's why Corey Wren is so appealing, and that's why a guy like, you know, Arian Smith is still a guy that he can really run. He's fast among the fast guys, and that's somebody. You named it, Brandon. Alabama has two or three guys like that, it seems like, and Georgia needs to get back to having one or two of its own.
Boy, Jeff, it's great to be back talking recruiting with you again. Thanks so much for being a part of our Marlowe's Tavern Insider Update. As we say goodbye to you, I'll remind folks that this is a great time to get out there and enjoy that Marlowe's patio, date night, you know, business lunch, whatever else you may have going on. Marlowe's Tavern, a great way to impress the person sitting across the table from you, and I know you'll enjoy checking that out, and I hope you'll check us out as well this Thursday. Myself, the former UGA great John Stinchcomb, for our Marlowe's matchup, looking ahead to the Dogs' trip to Knoxville to take on the Tennessee Vols. Jeff, thanks for being with us. We'll look forward to reading you. Forum.dognation.com, dognation.com, bunch of great stuff coming throughout the week here, and we'll enjoy checking that out from you and talking to you again right here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by Demerbox very soon as well.
All right, Brandon, I'll see you in the new cozy confines tomorrow for Hedges.
That's exactly right. Looking forward to that.
Let's take a look around the rest of the league. This is SEC Through.
Yeah, so as you heard Jeff say, the new cozy confines, we are in the process of working on a brand new studio here, and some of it's kind of fully operational. There's other parts of it we're kind of building out over the course of time. You're going to notice not too much different right now, but eventually you may notice a good bit more as we kind of move on in the months ahead. So, yeah, enjoy checking that out. Looking forward to some pretty good stuff coming up on that. All right, let's do our SEC through, and as we get ready to do that, I want to remind you about one thing here for a moment. Our friends at the UGA Alumni Association, you know, talk about a really cool stat. Here's a really cool stat. 96% of UGA undergraduate students are employed or pursuing advanced degrees within 6 months of graduation. That's amazing, right? And it's one of those things that that Georgia grads and people who care about the University of Georgia are incredibly impressed by. It's part of what makes a UGA education so impactful. It's those opportunities that students have beyond the classroom to get that done, including the University of Georgia's Experiential Learning Initiative, which gives students hands-on opportunities to connect with their academic foundations, creative endeavors, study abroad, going to internship opportunities, so many more things like that. It's the opportunities that your gifts and donations to the university provide, and it's that opportunity that helps these folks go through school, graduate, and then move on to great lives after that. So I hope you will keep that in mind when you make your gifts to UGA. And by the way, if you're a UGA alumnus or alumna and you want to show your pride in UGA, let me give you a website to also go to. It's give.uga.edu. The website, once again, give.uga.edu. uga.edu. Because when you donate to UGA, you're directly supporting the opportunities for students who are going out making the world a better place, building the facilities that make the university such an impressive place for us to tour and visit and see what the next generation of UGA grads are going to be able to do. By the way, speaking of the next generation of college athlete could very well have a array of choices that previous college athletes have not had much of a chance to enjoy. We are living in certainly interesting times. California, with the support of Los Angeles Lakers superstar LeBron James, has passed some legislation that's going to give student athletes in that state more freedom about how to use their likeness and more freedom about how to profit off of their own athletic abilities in kind of an endorsement vein, the same way that we would think of professional athletes being able to do this. Now, this has been met with a lot of controversy, especially from the NCAA. Now, there is an element of this kind of thing that no one relinquishes power voluntarily, and the NCAA sees as more student athletes get a chance to have control of their money and control of how their likeness is used to be traded for money. All of a sudden, that reduces the power of the NCAA and some of the conferences within there. So there's been a lot of talk about that. I saw where SEC Commissioner Greg Sankey gave a statement to Sports Illustrated. Now, I'm not going to read the entire thing because this is kind of a maddening statement trying to make sense of, but a couple of sentences here. Meaningful concern, he says, related to inherent consequences that will inevitably arise when individual states unilaterally alter a set of rules that currently apply to student athletes and universities throughout the country. So what he's saying is that as more states kind of pass their legislation, I guess there's a chance that Florida could pass legislation, for instance, within the SEC footprint that could take effect by 2020, but each of these states, I know Utah's thinking about doing this, and each of these states kind of having their own law, it says it's going to make it, what Sankey says is, it's going to make it more difficult for the NCAA to be able to operate because different states are going to have different laws. To me, this just sort of seems like an excuse for governing bodies that just don't want to deal with this new reality. Now, you don't have to be in favor of the new reality, but I think we would all agree that whether it's a good thing or a bad thing or not, certainly the NCAA and the conferences and all the people who are going to speak up on this for now within the world of college athletics, they like the old model because of how rich it made all of them. However, someone from outside at least the boundaries of the current world of college sports who's also spoken up on this is a former Georgia great and still one of the true icons in the state of Georgia, Herschel Walker. Walker gave a pretty pointed statement about the California legislation on Twitter yesterday. I want to share this with you. What Walker says is, "I disagree with the governor of California signing the bill that allows scholarship NCAA athletes to get paid. There's a reason it's called amateur sports," Walker says. "The school is paying for your degree. I do believe all scholarship athletes should receive a monthly fee," he says. So Walker's not in favor of this new potential world where athletes would have control over their likeness and their endorsements. Think about Todd Gurley signing autographs, which once led to an NCAA suspension. Now a guy like that would be free to do that kind of thing and keep the money that he makes for this for himself. I guess my overall takeaway is this. No one loves college sports more than I do. You may love it as much as I do, but you don't love it more than I do. And nobody would be more fearful of something that might put the future of college sports in jeopardy, college football included. It's not just my livelihood as a career. It's my ultimate passion as a weekend endeavor. I just love college football. I don't believe that anything that I've read thus far about the California legislation or anything like that, I don't believe that it puts football at risk, nor do I believe it violates any kind of standard of amateurism, things like that, because for the most part, I don't think really there are that many people that argue that anymore. Walker does, and as much as I love and respect Walker as a football player, on this particular issue, I think he's wrong. I think an education alone is a poor trade for the value that the top college football athletes, or really athletes in any sport, the value that the top athletes can potentially provide. I think an education alone is a poor trade for that value. So on this, and it's not the kind of thing I say very much, I'm on the opposite side of Herschel Walker. Now, reasonable people can disagree on this, but I feel pretty confident that the step towards giving these athletes a chance to market themselves and make money on that is probably a step in the right direction. And ultimately, after a couple of years, I believe we'll look back on this and say, well, I guess it kind of turned out not to be that big of a deal. Because here's the thing. There are only about, and I know this may sound wrong, but I'm pretty sure I'm right about this. There are only about 5 or 10% of college football players who are going to have any chance to market themselves anyway. there's just not an endless supply of autograph shows to go to. And there's just not an endless supply of auto dealers who are willing to pay X number of dollars to athlete to come over here and do a personal appearance here. For a guy like Jake Fromm, Tua Tagovailoa, Trevor Lawrence, DeAndre Swift, you can mention a few of these, there would be potentially a long list of marketing opportunities for them, and they may choose to take advantage of some of that kind of stuff. And I guess in my world, they probably should. It just seems fair and free and everything else. But for the most part, beyond the most well-known names in college football, a list that's probably not much more than 10, 15 names, beyond that, the opportunities for most of these guys are just going to be pretty limited. It's just not an endless supply of business opportunities out there. So if these kinds of laws get enacted by most states, there's only going to be in any given year a small number of football players who have enough fame and renown to even be able to take advantage of it. At least that's my thought on that. Let me do one more quick SEC through thing before we move on there as well. You know, I hope you've checked out. We do a cover four at DogNation.com where myself, our buddy Connor Riley, Jeff Sintel, Mike Griffith, we all kind of weigh in on hot topics involving UGA or the teams around college football. We were asked, and I've got, this will be coming out at the website coming up in a couple days, not to give away the store before you get a chance to read it. We were asked to name the top four teams in college football right now. My top four as it stands right now are all four out of the SEC. I've got Georgia, I've got Alabama, I've got LSU, and I've got Auburn. Now, obviously, there won't be four teams in the SEC make the college football playoff, but the fact that this deep in the season, it's even debatable that the four best might be from this league, I do think that increases the likelihood that the SEC might get more than one team into the playoff this year. I think that, to me, is the early story of college football, that through a little more of, or all, around about a month of action thus far, I don't think that anyone can match the resume that the four SEC teams can right now. And that includes Oklahoma and Ohio State and Clemson and some of these other teams that get a lot of discussion. I'd be curious to hear how you feel about that. You can weigh in on this in our comment section. If you're watching on video, you can hit me up on Twitter at Dog Nation Daily. And for now, we'll make that your SEC through. And here on Dog Nation Daily, presented by DeamerBox today, I do want to get our topic back to the Georgia Bulldogs in full here and the game coming up this Saturday against the Tennessee Vols. And there are always going to be a lot of potential subplots when Georgia and Tennessee get together. These are rivals that have a long history against each other. But in the contemporary sense, what makes this week's game pretty interesting is the fact that it's Georgia for the first time doing battle with now former UGA offensive coordinator Jim Chaney. Now, this is a big deal for some UGA fans because they'd like to get a measure of retribution against him because they weren't always happy with his play calling when he was at Georgia and weren't happy with the way that Vols fans seemingly spiked the football when Chaney left Georgia for Tennessee in a really big contract. But as far as the impact on the field, Kirby Smart says that guys that do what I do for a living have a tendency to make a little too much of that. Here's Kirby on the subject of Chaney.
I think there's a lot more to it in you guys' stories than there is in real life. It's going to boil down to which guy blocks properly, which guy covers properly. There's no, like, secrets. I mean, we know what they do. They know what we do. But that's the case every week. That's what the tape's for. So there's a lot of familiarity there. And at the end of the day, the players got to go out and execute. They've got to play with a passion and energy, enthusiasm to beat the guy across from them and not make it about what our defensive coordinator calls or what their offensive coordinator calls. I just don't think that matters a whole lot. I think at the end of the day, it's blocking, tackling, turnovers, explosive plays, executing and doing it with a lot of passion.
Yeah, I think for the most part, that's true from Smart. You know, I think that we live in a world now where Georgia employs so many analysts and so many non-coaches within the football office that everybody's watching so much film on everybody, and teams like Georgia and Tennessee play each other so much during the season, or, you know, year over year, season after season, there are very few secrets about what anybody does. And so Chaney leaving Georgia to go work at Tennessee, I'm not quite so sure he takes the military launch codes with him the way that some people might think that he does. I don't think there are that many secrets overall when it comes to college football. I do think that Smart's probably right in that. That's an example of coach speak that I probably believe, that we have a tendency to make a little too much of what Chaney might know about Georgia. I think for the most part, coaches kind of all know each other's tendencies and secrets. However, I thought that David Ubben from The Athletic had a pretty interesting line about just how ineffective Chaney has been in getting anything out of Jared Garantano this year. That I thought was pretty interesting. By the way, Gator Hater Update, as we get ready to sign off, 1,067 days. We'll see you tomorrow, Dog Nation Daily. presented by Deamer Box.